This project was made possible thanks to the sponsorship of the Barossa Village, the creative energies and skills of the Emu Tree, Daisy Love George, and the staff at Barossa Village. This project was designed to create a lasting memory of the people who contributed so much to our community. This morning I'm talking to James Maitland. Thank you very much for coming to speak with me this morning. Can I ask you firstly, could you just confirm for me your date of birth?
14th of the 1st, 1948.
Who were your parents and whereabouts were you born?
My parents were Shirley and Walter Maitland, and I believe I was born in Adelaide.
Oh no, it's true, he was born in Adelaide.
Thank you, Prue.
That's all right.
That's why she's here.
So whereabouts did you grow up? Where was your childhood spent?
On a farm, 15 kilometres northwest of Clare. You name it, we had it.
Good times?
Oh yeah. No, they weren't. They were all over the place. Because I mean, part of the time while I was there, the wool boom stops, and that was our major production wool.
So what are some of the earliest memories growing up on the farm?
I don't have many serious memories of early life on the farm, because we did everything. We had eggs, chooks for egg production. We sent away for sale, up to 20 dozen a week. We had 250 chooks. They used to be collected by Farmers Union truck. And they also used to collect cream that we had separated because we had milked a house cow. And we separated the milk to pigs, drank some ourselves, obviously, sent the cream off on the same truck to the Farmers Union's facility, I think, in a place called Auburn.
And what fascinates me when I was told that story was that the money that they got from the eggs and the cream paid a workman's salary.
Really?
Well, that's what you make in the 1950s, 60s. Wages. So your parents had a couple that lived in a cottage on the property, and he used to help out on the farm. And the money that they got from the sale of those two
basically
things...
Basically paid the wages, yeah.
Big difference now.
Mm. Mm. Did you have brothers or sisters on the farm as well?
Yes. You're both younger. A brother and a sister.
And what were their names?
Ian and Anne.
And how did you all get along? Did you get on okay?
Well, I didn't have to because I went to boarding school. Over years, pretty much, pretty well. As children, definitely. Our father was convinced that we should learn to ride horses, so we did. Which then led me to be able to try and play a game called polo, which you've heard of probably, but you've never seen. I was never very good as a polo player, but I had a go.
There used to be a riding school run. Now, we live right next door to a big property called Bungaree, and the lady who was the owner of Bungaree with her husband used to get the sergeant of police to come up. He was the sergeant of the horses and the police force, come up and run a riding school for your kids during the school holidays, which was an amazing experience.
So we were taught professionally to ride, as well as unprofessionally. We didn't have any motorbikes, but we did. When I took over, we went to motorbikes. They were easier to catch.
You didn't have to water or feed them. When you went jackarooing, when she left school, you went to a property where there were motorbikes. There were no horses, so you had to learn to ride a motorbike.
The interesting thing is, I was one of only two of the people working on a station, a very big station, that could ride a horse. And we had to use them at one stage because normally they used to muster the sheep on the station by removing access to water for the sheep. So the sheep would come in and they would get caught in a yard, and you'd then go and get them and take them to where you needed to take them. But if it rained, there was water everywhere. And there was an area that was almost too rough to ride motorbikes over anyway. So you needed the horses. And I was one of the two people that was sent out to this very rough part of the property on horseback to bring the sheep in.
Whereabouts in the country was this?
The homestead of the property was 25 miles or west-northwest of Port Augusta.
It's called Carawaloo.
It's a property you may have heard of. If you look at road maps, a lot of road maps, it is actually marked on there. It's because it's such a sparsely populated area of the state, there's not many properties. And Carawaloo was one of them. There was one that has been used in two movies that I know of. That was the last one. Rotary Under Arms, another film which you may have seen, was also filmed, part of it, around the woolshed on this property.
So what age were you when you were jackarooing?
I hadn't turned 16 when I left school, but I did in January, and so that's when I went there. I was there. That was my first jackarooing experience, arranged by my father, and I went to that property because the manager of that time, of that property, was a great friend of my father's. Very, very close friend. I think they went to the sporting school too, and remained lifelong friends. But from there, I went to an absolute opposite experience between Glen Innes and Grafton in the north eastern corner of New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it real Ned Kelly country. You're right in the dividing range. There was no flat ground. Sorry, that's not true. Apart from the riverbed that ran, was quite a big river, that ran through the property, there was no flat ground anywhere. Right. It was all hills like this.
Beautiful country?
Magnificent country, but not easy to manage.
Mm.
As I said before, on the farm at home, our main production was wool. On this property, the only production was beef. Slightly different. But a very interesting time I had, because we had stud sheep, and this particular property had stud cattle. They were upgrading a herd of Devon Durham cattle to Santa Gertrudis. And that was interesting to me because of my bit of knowledge of stud background. But by the time I left up there, and I was only there 6 months, they had their first two purebred, which was fourth cross Santa Gertrudis. But just because they were fourth cross, which was what was the requirement, they didn't necessarily get classified. They had to pass a physical test, appearance-wise. So that was happening while I was there. So it was very interesting to watch. They had to get them accredited by an authority. And, of course, before the authority came to accredit them, everybody discussed whether they'd get up or not, whether they'd pass or not. And I think three of the four did. We ate rabbit three times a day. You couldn't walk anywhere without treading on a rabbit almost. I mean, it was really serious rabbits. And the son of the owner, it was a family property that I was on, would go out once a week with a rifle, and an open sight, no scope, a packet of bullets, 50, and he would do all the shooting, I didn't do any.
Okay.
He would come back with 5 bullets left, 45 dead rabbits, all shot through the head.
Good shot.
Was. Absolutely. And anywhere he slightly missed, they were scud anyway for the dogs. Dog bed. Cold roast rabbit for breakfast, lunch and dinner.
You had to use horses there.
Yeah.
And your father was horrified when you came home.
We had horses at home still. And I was instructed to go and do something on the horse. And when I saddled the horse up and jumped on board in bare feet and shorts, my father had a fit. He didn't ride horses like that. But that's the way we did it on the property in New South Wales, because we had to. Because part of the job every day was to move irrigation pipes. And if you can imagine, you've had the sprinklers, they were big long pipes, that the sprinklers had been on, therefore the ground where the pipe was lying was muddy. And where we were going to move it to was dry and rough. So I'm not sure I questioned what you could you wear on your feet. There's nothing you can wear on your feet. Whatever you wear, if you put rubber boots on though, the suction will pull them off. And so you go barefoot. So we'd go from doing jobs on horseback to moving irrigation pipes.
Barefoot on the horses, yeah, your father wasn't impressed.
And shorts. I mean, that was the other thing. He said, you can't understand that. Your legs will get to try. I said, I've been doing it for the last 6 months. All you've got to do is keep the stirrup leather tight and they don't pinch.
Yep.
But if you don't keep them tight, they do pinch.
So all this is before you're even 20 years of age?
Yes. Yeah. Well, my intention was always to go back to the farm, but therefore I had to get as much experience as I could while I was there early. But then my father's health deteriorated, which meant I had to come home and get my national service sorted out, which I did part-time.
Because he was in that age group.
I don't know whether I was called up or not. They never published the dates of the birthdays that came out of the barrel, but I'd already been in for 2 years, which sort of half exempted me, but they still wouldn't tell me. To this day, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I did my six years.
6 years in CMF. And based in Clare.
In Clare, there was and still is a drill hall in Clare. And there was a company in that day, era, based in Clare. Company headquarters had one platoon in Clare and the other one in Kadena.
I think, looking in from the outside, from my perspective, because I didn't grow up in the area, for James to go away to boarding school and then go jackarooing, it actually connected him with the community to come back and join something like the CMF. You also became very involved in rural youth.
Also joined rural youth, yeah.
Which was a great experience because that connected him yet again with the local community, and he then met friends that he's still friends with through rural youth. Had a big impact on your life, rural youth, didn't it? So you went on to be on the state committee, didn't you?
I was deputy chairman, deputy president, whatever.
Yeah.
Deputy. I was furious. The guy who became the president instead of me, and I was his deputy, won an award, which was a P&O award, which was a 6-month scholarship trip to the UK. And because he won that and disappeared, I did his job while he was away. I still speak to him. I was persuaded not long after I got home by a next door neighbour who was the local councillor to take his position when his term expired. Would I nominate in his place? He thought I was suitable, and I did.
That was the Blythe Council.
That was the Blythe Council.
BLYTH.
That led to an amalgamation. I mean, the other reason I joined was that there was talk of amalgamating councils, and I was fearful from where we were living that if we got forced into an amalgamation process, we would be told to amalgamate with Clare. And that would have been a disaster, in my mind, for Blythe and Snowtown later on. Because we'd have got swallowed. I mean, Clare was so big, and Blythe and Brinkworth and Snowtown were so small, they would have been ignored. Blythe and Snowtown amalgamated, and then Blythe, Snowtown as a council amalgamated with Snowtown. So you had three. That amalgamation took place in the second one. The Blythe-Snowtown one took place pretty soon after I joined. The second one happened in 1995.
I was teaching part-time and then full-time, and often with James's commitment to all these other things, because it wasn't just local government, it was health as well. So he got involved with the local hospital health board, and then it led to sort of like a regional health board, and he became the chairman of that. And I always supported him, and often on the weekends when I wasn't teaching, we'd catch up on farming work. We didn't do the growing of crops. We had a share farmer for that, which actually probably enabled James to have more time to give to the community.
I looked after the livestock on the farm. And I've said it jokingly regular times, if you were feeding the stock, they didn't really know the difference between Saturday and Sunday and Monday.
We'd fit things
so
in.
So you fed the sheep 3 times a week. You fed them, within reason, any 3 times, any 3 days. So the fact that I was rarely home, sometimes during the week.
What it led to was like state level stuff. And James's parents had retired to Adelaide because of James's father's health. And eventually when we lost both of them, we still had this house in Adelaide, which meant he could go down and stay in Adelaide for the night for those meetings and things, which was really, really handy.
Mm.
And this is all pre-health problems. But then in 15, 16 years ago, he had heart surgery, which led to a stroke. And he kept on for another term of mayor with my support. But then at the end of that term, we realised that he wasn't able to do a lot more on the farm with no use of a left hand, and that it reached the point where he didn't want to go on being in local government. So it all sort of came together nicely.
My term expired.
Yeah, so he didn't stand again.
And you gave me a deadline.
I did. I gave you a date. I said, we're moving on November the 13th or something.
You already bought the house.
We bought a house down here because our daughter lives down here. And also we wanted to be closer to Adelaide, but not in Adelaide, be part of a rural community. So it really worked well for us to come here. We still have a son who's not on the farm but lives at Clare. So it's only an hour and a bit there and an hour and a bit to Adelaide. So
I got from local government into the health sector because the council, when I first was elected as a councillor, which happened, and I then lost an election, the suggestion was that the person that represented the ward I was in would represent the whole council then on the Clare Hospital Board. So I always said, you're it. And in the meantime, the Clare Hospital Board were in trouble. They couldn't find a chairman for the board other than a doctor. And everybody agreed, including the doctor, that wasn't appropriate. And they said, you've got nothing to do now. You can do it. That's basically what a couple of them said. And that's the way it went.
The Clare area was in need of a new kind of nursing home. And James was on the planning committee for that new nursing home, which was built behind the Clare Hospital. And that was an amazing experience, because you'd come and tell me about the various things that, you know, you looked at and what you needed to provide in a nursing home environment. And that was a whole new experience. But it was a highlight for the community to have another. Yeah. We did have one nursing home, but this was sort of for more.
The CWA one, yeah.
Yeah, but the second one.
The existing one was the CWA one. And there was never animosity between them both. They agreed that they both needed to be there.
Mm.
And also, one other highlight that I think we both really enjoyed, as well as all this, he was involved with the Clare Show Society and became president of it. And one year we had Dame Roma Mitchell come up to open the Clare Show, pouring with rain, but she was amazing. And she did the show and looked around, and I lent her an umbrella so she didn't slip over. And then 3 weeks later, we got an invitation to Government House for dinner. And that was an amazing experience, wasn't it?
Was.
We got like 3 pages of protocol we had to, you know, and then we went into this amazing, the dining room with all these portraits of ex-governors around. That was a real highlight for us to go to. And so interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And strict protocol. So when we'd finished eating, they completely cleared the table and they put a port glass in front of each of us, and then the decanters of port, and it's only ever passed to the left. And I'm not a port drinker, but immediately they put a glass
in front of Dame Roma.
Yeah, and then it passed around.
Right around the table.
And then we all stood up.
Not allowed to touch the table.
Not allowed to touch the table, that's right, the decanter wasn't. It was just another experience in life.
Mm.
But I also have to say to you that all the different things that happened during your time as on the Local Government Association, we went to a lot of amazing dinners and heard amazing people speak and went to conferences. And it was a lovely sort of rapport we then built up with the other mayors that we got to know through going to conferences and things. And there was a gang of you that we always sat together, and then the wives or the partners, we'd all go off and do things together as well. But it was an amazing experience. And there were times when I actually would say to him, hang on, wait a minute, you've got too much on your plate. But you loved it, didn't you?
The plate never overflowed.
And did James listen, or did he soldier on?
No, he didn't soldier on. But we did do it together. A lot of it was together. I would help with reports, and once he couldn't type, but once you couldn't with your left hand being so bad.
I never could.
Well, you
really?
Did.
Not really.
No, but anyway, we were a team. I mean, we did things together.
Yeah, and that's why it worked.
Mm. That's how it worked. And I was working full time, and James was home on a farm if he wasn't at a meeting. So he said, right, I'll cook the dinner every night, and I'll do the washing every day, the washing.
Every week.
So, you know, we had a... And I think we probably broke the mould a bit of our generation with... You know, it used to be always the wife was home on the farm and the farmer was off working, whatever. But then we needed to have another income coming in at times. So, you know, I went to work as well. So,
What can you tell me your children? You said you had two?
Angus
is the guy. Angus is... we made a decision for him when he was a fairly young child that if he continued on like he was with his health, he wasn't suitable as a farmer. He used to suffer from violent hay fever. He'd invariably, if he started sneezing, get a blood nose and asthma as well. So, as it's turned out, he probably would have survived. But it was apparent to me, anyway, being an asthmatic and suffering from hay fever, that he really would never cope on the farm.
Had a lot of allergies.
Because of all those allergies. So he we went to Regency Park to learn how to be a waiter.
Hotel manager.
Yeah, no, well, that ultimately, no, hotel manager.
But it was hospitality you did.
Initially, to work in the hospitality industry. And you paid his fees, which I didn't know you had for a while, for the first term. And then we learned halfway through the second term, even though he'd paid the fees again, he wasn't going there anymore. He'd got a job. Finished up being a duty manager regularly at all sorts of hotels in Adelaide, mainly hotels that were frequented by country people, because that's what he was. He then realised that he wasn't getting a suntan. He never saw the sun, working all night and sleeping all day.
I think you can only keep up that pace for a certain length of time too. Mm. I think it's a unhealthy way.
He's also very kind to other people. Always got other people in his mind. He went with a mate who had just bought a delivery business around Adelaide, delivering swan goods, I think, to delicatessens, hotels, you know, and it needed two people in the job. And it was a father and son. The son was his mate who took the business on. The father was promptly diagnosed with cancer. And so...
So he took over that role?
He went into that role for a while, but not for a long time. Not for long.
I've forgotten that. Hmm.
Then he went to the Barossa to get some outside work. And I'm not sure what that business did.
He was helping to put vineyards in.
He was helping to establish vineyards. He wasn't great picking or pruning. He was renovating, I think, and establishing vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
Got a job with a contractor. And away he went from there. He also started a gardening business.
They got married.
They got married. They went to Adelaide to live when he was doing the delivery business. And they made a mistake. They would now admit anyway. They spent too much money on rent. They rented a house they couldn't afford. And we got a phone call one day. Could they come home and live in the cottage, our spare house? To which my immediate thought was no. Because it needed a fair bit of work. Nobody had lived in it since we'd moved out of it. We lived there for 2 years. And the houses are how far apart?
Oh, not that far.
80 metres, which is too close.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to live in a street in the town. That was fine anyway, but they lived there for a period of time. And he started out as a lawn mowing business. Borrowed a trailer and a ride-on lawnmower from us, wore the lawnmower out, and eventually bought the trailer and upgraded it because it wasn't legal when I was using it. So yes, and that started him off into the contracting business. He now calls himself contracting, and his main business is laying cables for Telstra and...
he's subcontracting.
The internet. Yeah. And at the moment, they're going back and doing a lot of that. Because of the differential in policy between the two major parties in federally, there was a dispute as to how the internet should be delivered to homes. Whether it should be, what's it called?
Fibre to the net.
Fibre to the house, mm. Or fibre to the node. And they're now going back, and particularly they went back to all the schools and put the fibre to the premise to improve the internet speed to schools.
Mm.
And he did a lot of that.
Now he's got the contract to do the whole of Clare.
Yeah.
He did the whole of Ardrossan. He's got about 25 people that work for him.
Wow.
And he's got the most amazing equipment. He needed to be able to put...
He didn't need to, but he had to continually put cables on the road. And the worst part about that job is reinstating the road, because the owner of the road is going to watch you like a hawk. And if you don't repair it, put it back like it was, or better, you've got to go back and do it again. So he bought a horizontal drill under the road.
He's got two now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he can go under a road. And it's not just cable now. I mean, a couple of years ago he was putting a pipeline that went from Wolf Blass right out to...
From the Wolf Blass Winery.
To a dam out behind where the new petrol station and everything is. Mm-hmm. 6 kilometres?
So down to Belvedere Road, yeah.
Yeah, so then that was a big job.
That was Wolf Blass wanting to get their wastewater to a new vineyard.
Sky?
SKYE. She's our daughter.
She went to university to train as a speech pathologist. And We were very pleased at one stage where we were summoned to a presentation day by the minister, from the minister for who? Which minister
was? Health was Michael Armitage.
Armitage. She'd won a scholar, country scholarship.
A rural health scholarship.
She had to spend as many years working in the country as she had the scholarship for. And that's a good system, I reckon. Should happen everywhere, all over the place. But she was lucky. She got a job in Wyala, which she loved the job.
She then married a local Barossa fellow. So they've got six children. So life's very busy in that household. They're not all home. Some of them are at boarding school. But it's very, very, very busy. He is a winemaker and also has another full-time business of selling firewood. So they employ people to do that. But the oldest of their family has been at school, come home, and now is working for Dad. But it's very busy, lots of sport being played. So that's our children. Mm. So we have eight grandchildren. We start off with two of us and two children, then we sit down when we're 14, and some of them are now getting girlfriends. And so our son has two girls. So it's a lovely family. We're very happy with our family, and they're very kind to me and help me out. Since James has had to come in here, they've, you know, often... Sky is very supportive, and our son's very kind and caring. So sometimes when I ring up and I have a bit of chat, he says, oh, I might come down and stay with you tomorrow night. So I'm very happy with. And as someone said, what you put in, you get back. So we're very fortunate. They grew up, if you didn't come out in a tracksuit and T-shirt after you had your shower when you worked on the farm, if you came out in a pair of trousers and a shirt and tie, they'd go, have you got a meeting tonight? By the way he dressed.
I didn't wear a tie.
I'm not a tie, anyway. Well, when you were me, you wore a tie. I always had a dress code for that.
Once again, you look at a list like this, it's like, where do you start? Like, local government from 1985 onwards, there's like over a dozen different things listed there. Order of Australia?
OAM, yeah.
OAM? The Order of Australia. How did you feel?
I guessed it was coming.
Did you?
Well, you and Kevin Jeske asked so many.
But how did you feel, though?
How did I feel? I guess...
Honoured?
Yeah, honoured, of course.
It took a couple of years for it to happen. They don't go into it lightly. So he rang me, this friend, and said, can you give me a CV? And he said, oh, I thought it would have happened earlier than it has. But I gather now that it all goes to Canberra, and there's actually a committee that look at them, and then they ring some of the people that might have been involved in those organisations to get references.
References,
yeah. And I had a number of phone calls about other people.
But there were a couple of people from sort of like Balaclava and places that were recommended, and obviously they go to people that know them. And I remember you being involved with giving people, you know, a referral.
Mm. Always only verbal, which makes it easier.
Mm-hmm. And then when he got it, we went off to the to Government House again for the presentation.
Yeah.
We got to go to Government House quite frequently, actually, because several of the governors would hold a drinks party for, was it for Australia Day or Queen's was it for Queen's birthday or something? So we actually were quite honoured to go there. And then when he was being given his Order of Australia, we were allowed to invite, he was allowed to invite three people, so we took our two children. And I can remember we were out to park behind Government House, and that was when...
Hugh Van Lier.
He got the gardeners of Government House to grow a lot of the Vietnamese vegetables. And we drove around the back, and there are the gardeners. And I said to them, oh, amazing, beautiful vegetables. And they said, the problem is the ducks come up from the River Torrens, and they try, you know, and eat, and we've put netting on it, but the ducks have learnt to sit on the netting and then peck at the things that pop up. Now, he was a lovely man, wasn't he?
He was. I met a lot of them.
So there was a conference in Adelaide for all these people that belong to the Order of Australia Association, and James and I were involved with the organisation of that conference. And sitting at the table with him, because he was the patron of it, and his wife, She was a Crows supporter. And in the middle of the dinner, she said to somebody who also was a Crows, have you heard what the score is? I thought that was so lovely. I thought, you know, there she is, the governor's wife. But, you know, they're ordinary, everyday people. And she wanted to know what the Crows score was in the middle of the official dinner. I thought that was a great story.
Mm.
But, you know, you meet over the years with those life government dinners, you met all sorts of different people. And I won't mention any names, but one night we went to this big dinner. And because you were on the board, we had to like host some various politicians. And there were female and a male politician, and they were sitting next to me. And I said to James, I know now how they learn that they remember names. Whenever anybody walked past, this female politician would go to be like, hello, darling, how are you? And he'd go, g'day, mate. And I mean, I never knew anybody's names. But I just thought, wow, you know, it was passable.
But they could get away with it too.
Yeah.
If you could give any bit of advice to the younger generations, what advice
I think this
could you give?
Australia's a good place to live. Point one. I mean, that's obvious. That's said by everybody. Make sure you're living somewhere where you can get whatever you need is available. Start living for tomorrow. The philosophy I've always had in most things is don't buy something that you can't pay for.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, if you want to, particularly at this age they're at now, if they want to buy something that's worth $100, for instance, have the $100 in your hand when you buy it. Don't think, oh, I'll get $100 next week.
Mm.
I'll buy it then. It's always now. They live for now.
Mm.
See, we decided we'd get married, have children, then travel. Whereas some of my friends were travelling and then getting married. I mean, we were quite young when we got married, when you think about it. And we had children early, and then we were able to, in the last 10 years or so, we did a lot of travelling.
We did a lot of travelling.
Yeah.
And where did you travel to?
We actually did mainly cruises, but before that we went to... I taught with a girl who was Norwegian. We were very lucky enough to go and to Norway and stay with them and travel through Norway. Bus trips were difficult for James and difficult for me because we'd have to have the suitcase outside the door at 6 in the morning and I'd have to pack because he can't fold clothes. So we decided cruises were the best way to go. So we've been on a lot of cruises. First cruise we did ever was just out to the Pacific and back again. And then the next cruise we did was to Singapore and then fly to Barcelona to do another cruise. Unfortunately, James became unwell in Barcelona. We did that again, the one that went around the... we started in Venice and then went around to Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
We did the river cruise in Europe, which was the Amsterdam to Budapest. That's just... I would love to do it again. That was just the most gorgeous cruise. Then we did all the way around the UK, Ireland and Scotland and back around to London. We went from London to St. Petersburg and back. We did... the last one we ever did was huge. We went from Sydney to Hawaii, calling in at all the islands along the way. And then on the same ship, we went up to Vancouver. And then on the same ship, we went from Vancouver out to Alaska.
Wow.
Back to, wasn't Vancouver, it was back to the American town. By train up to Vancouver, then flew back. Now that was 6-8 weeks of traveling. That was probably the biggest one we've ever done. But cruising's great because James doesn't necessarily have to get up and rush off anywhere in the morning. And some days we could go to breakfast late or we could, you know, just take our time.
Mm-hmm.
And we went with some friends sometimes or by ourselves sometimes. Had some wonderful experiences. So we've been to quite a lot of countries.
Sounds like it.
New Zealand 5 times?
Oh, yeah, I've been to New Zealand 5 times. New Zealand was just to visit the first couple of times. And then through our son, we met a couple our age. So their son was living next door to our son. And then we became friendly with that couple who are south of Christchurch. So we went back and stayed with them several times. So, yeah, we have. New Zealand 5 times. And then Hong Kong was the first trip we ever did overseas. But the other thing was that we had to fit it in between council meetings. But we did a lot of travelling and have been to and seen some amazing places.
Thank you, James. And thank you, Prue, for chatting with me today. It's been wonderful to meet you. And I wish you all the best for the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Nice to meet you too.
Thank you.
You have been listening to a podcast from the Barossa Village Oral History Project. Further podcasts can be found and downloaded at thewaywewere.podbean.com.